It was 7 a.m. on August 7th, 44 years ago. A young man, 1 week shy of his 25th birthday, stood with one foot on the edge of a building and the other foot on a steel cable 3/4 of an inch in diameter. The man was French wire walker Philippe Petit. The building was the South Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City. And that cable was about 1/4 mile off the ground. And if you're interested, by the way, an average adult thumb is about 3/4 of an inch. Petit has described this moment with one foot here and one foot there in his book, Man on Wire, which is also the name of the award-winning 2008 documentary about the walk, and which comes actually from what one of the police officers wrote on the form describing the incident, Man on Wire. This is what he said. I place my left foot on the steel rope. The weight of my body rests on my right leg, still anchored to the flank of the building. I still belong to the material world. Should I ever so slightly shift the weight of my body to the left, my right leg will be unburdened. My left foot will freely meet the wire. On one side, the mass of a mountain, a life I know. On the other, the universe of the clouds, so full of unknown that it seems empty to us. Too much space. Between the two, a thin line on which my being hesitates to distribute whatever strength it has left. Around me, no thoughts, too much space. At my feet, a wire, nothing else. He then did shift his weight to the left, stepped free of the building, and proceeded to spend the next 45 minutes walking, dancing, kneeling, and even lying down on that 3/4 of an inch cable, 1/4 mile above New York City's financial district, on the thickness of your thumb. It's no wonder he was 1 week shy of 25. No full-grown adult would do something like that. Just as the circus art of juggling is often used as a metaphor, I'm juggling too much right now, I don't know how I can keep all the balls in the air, so is the art of the wire walker. When things are hard, when we feel we need to be especially careful, we might say that we feel like we're walking a tightrope, where with one wrong step, you often hear relationships referred to as minefields. But it's just as often said that you've got to be able to walk a tightrope to be in a relationship. On the one side, your needs and desires. On the other side, theirs. On one side, being empathic and understanding. On the other, asserting yourself. Cap on, cap off the toothpaste. Toilet paper over or under the roll. This is serious stuff. Most Sundays, while I'm telling you, as I did this Sunday, that you are free to do here whatever it is that you specifically and particularly need to do to feel fully present, while being aware that there are people around you who have their own needs that might be different than yours, I say that you get to engage the spiritual practice of balancing your needs with the needs of someone else. And I'm not just trying to be cute. I mean it. Balancing my needs with the needs of someone else is spiritual work. And like all spiritual practices, it is both really simple and deceptively so. A few weeks back, I was talking about that near universal, deeply seated fear that if someone knew the full truth of who we are, they wouldn't like us anymore and would reject us. It's amazing how common that fear is. If you really know who I am, you'll reject me. So most of us have developed a myriad of ways to keep someone from discovering the full truth of who we are. We keep part of ourselves stashed away. Hidden might be too strong a word for some of us, but certainly out of sight, and not in the groovy 60s way. That makes me happy when that happens each Sunday. I want to say, told you so. There was a movie, can't remember what movie it was. I think Terrence Howard was playing a preacher and her phone goes off and he goes, "That better be Jesus calling." Well, a couple of days ago, I was driving and listening to Santana's album, Supernatural. I got hooked, as I always do, on the song, Smooth. And since during the week I'm generally writing and rewriting that Sunday sermon in my head, a part of the chorus jumped out at me in a way it hadn't before. Don't worry, I'm not going to sing it. Rob Thomas, vocalist for Matchbox 20, sings, "I would change my life to better suit your mood. I would change my life to better suit your mood. I would become who you want or need me to be to make or keep you happy." This might be a little extreme for some of us. Actually, I hope it is. Yet don't most of us at least recognize the impulse behind that? Haven't most of us at some time or other tried to morph ourselves into something else for the sake of someone else? Laughed at a joke we didn't really find all that funny. Found delicious, or at least palatable, a meal that we didn't find to be either. Sat through the latest Marvel movie when we really wanted to be one theater over watching that new romantic comedy. Listen to a story when we'd rather be watching the game. Does that sound familiar to anybody? Yeah. I think so, because most of the folks who gather in Unitarian Universalist congregations on Sunday mornings tend to be good-hearted, well-meaning, caring folks. And if we're at all evolved human beings, as I hope at least most of us are at least some of the time, then I know that your needs matter to me, if you matter to me at all. And being the caring person that I am, I want to see that you get your needs met to the extent that I'm able to influence that. So while there's this extreme form of the impulse, there's also a more reasonable version as well. Sometimes it's good, it's right to put someone else's needs before our own. At the same time, though, we UUs tend to be pretty darned individualistic. And we're well aware of how easy it is to go too far in that direction of giving ourselves over to another person. We know that it's possible to lose ourselves in the process. That it's not healthy to follow Rob Thomas's relationship advice and change our lives to better suit someone else's moods. So, individualists that we are likely to have within us the spark of the assertive, "you can't tell me what to do" energy. Yes, 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 your feelings matter, but so do mine. The majority of us UUs are part of the baby boomer generation, and we were raised knowing how important it is to be authentic, to be real, to be ourselves. We've committed to memory St. Mary Oliver's poem, The Journey, or at least its sentiment that we have to leave behind us the voices that kept shouting their bad advice. "Mend my life," each voice cried. Nevertheless, we strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing we could do, determined to save the only life we could save. I can't fix anyone else. I can't mend anyone else's life. I can't change anyone except myself. And since I can't, it's important, essential even, that I focus my energy on my side of the street. That kind of game playing where I try to pretend to be who you want me to be is unhealthy for both of us. I mean, we're not narcissistic or anything, but as Sammy Davis Jr. used to saying, I've got to be me. Right? And so there's the balance. On the one side, the oh so very human need to do whatever we can with that deep, to deal with that deep, deep fear in us that who we are is not enough and that we need to show the world a more acceptable face than the face we fear will cause us to be rejected. That's the unhealthy version. The healthy, mature, compassionate version is the desire to be understanding of the person or people with whom I'm in relationship, to care about their needs as much as my own, to want to do for them what I'd want them to do for me, to want to put their needs first, at least some of the time. That's on one side. On the other side is the felt need to project and at the same time protect myself, to proudly proclaim my individuality, to declare this is who I am. And there's the mature and compassionate recognition that it's unhealthy to collapse myself into another, to change my life so much for the other person or people with whom I'm in relationship that it no longer really is my life. Between the two, a thin line on which our being hesitates. At our feet, a wire and nothing else. Now, I said a couple of times there, the person or people with whom I'm in relationship, because all of this is applicable to relationships other than the one-to-one relationship I'd wager most of us were thinking. All of this is true to some extent in our relationships with our bosses, our employees, our teachers, our students, our friends, our children, our parents, the people in our covenant group, the people on the board, and vice versa, the people sitting closest to us this morning who might well have different needs than our own. It's true, too, in our relationships with whole groups. Theists and atheists, parents with young children and retirees with more time for volunteering, people who want more music, people who want more words, people who want more silence, people who want things the way they were, and people who want things to be the way they could be, people who want the same thing, yet see different ways of getting there. People who want donut holes during coffee hour and people who only want healthful snacks. Remember that? In each of these relationships, in all of our relationships, we can see at least something of this dynamic that I've been talking about. The one side, the other side, and that thin tightrope down the middle. Now, I want to say something about tightropes. They're not really tight. They're not as loose as slack ropes, of course, nor as solid as a solid rod. What we call a tightrope has to have a little play up and down, side to side, a little give. It has to have what wire walkers call life. Does that remind you of anything? I've told many times before the story from the Buddhist tradition, but a good story is always worth repeating, and some people haven't been here to hear it yet. Siddhartha Gautama was involved in extreme practices of austere self-denial when he overheard a sitar teacher passing on the river teaching her student how to string the instrument. It's coming back to you, some of you, right? Too loose and the strings won't make any sound. Too tight and they'll snap. If you tighten them just right, though, neither too loose nor too tight, the music they make will be perfect. The Buddha to be realized that he too needed to tread this middle path between a too harsh asceticism and a too wanton hedonism. The middle way. The middle path. That's what the Buddha called his teachings of the Four Noble Truths that make up the heart of Buddhist teachings to this day. Not leaning too much to one side or too much to the other. Now I want to say something about tightrope walkers, both literal and metaphoric. Actually, I'm going to quote Sergeant Charles Daniels, a member of the New York City Port Authority Police, one of the people who tried for about 45 minutes to get Petit off that wire so that they could arrest him. He would walk up to really close to the building. They'd reach out for him and he'd turn around and walk away. It was great. When being interviewed shortly afterwards, in true policeman fashion, he said, "Officer Muniz and I observed the tightrope dancer," because you can't really call him a walker. The tightrope dancer. Because you can't really call him a walker. So I want to squeeze out one last drop from this metaphor. One last drop. It doesn't really matter how high the wire is. In fact, 4 years ago, for the 40th anniversary of what I always call the Dance Between the Towers, Petit celebrated the anniversary by doing a walk at the Longhouse Reserve in East Hampton, New York. The wire was only going to be 25 feet off the air, not the 1,400 it was in 74. Yet Petit said that in many ways he was more nervous about this anniversary walk than he had been for the original thing. Not because he said that he thought his skills had deteriorated in any way. In fact, he said in an interview at the time, and I quote him, so this is his fault, "At 65, I am better than I was when I was an arrogant little bastard at 18. Now, the reason he was more nervous about this 25-foot-high wire than the quarter-mile wire was that the wire was going to go over a pond, and he hates water because he can't swim. It doesn't matter how high or how low the wire is. What matters is that we walk on it, dance on it, and that we let it move. Now, all this may seem too simplistic, too airy, pun intended. It may seem like it doesn't have enough substance for a Sunday morning. Yet spiritual teachings quite often look like that. At least that's what I've always found. And as I've said about spiritual practices, the teachings of the great spiritual teachers of all the great world religions are generally both really simple and deceptively so. One of my mentors likes to say that what we preachers do up here on a Sunday morning is just the beginning of the sermon. What we do with it during the rest of the week is the sermon. So I'm going to encourage each of us, all of us, to spend some time this week looking through the lens of this metaphor at our relationships. Relationships with individuals in our lives, with the groups we're part of. To look at all of the relationships we're involved in and all their varied permutations. To use this metaphor and to ask ourselves, am I leaning too far to one side or the other here? Am I off balance in this relationship? What is the wire beneath my feet? Where do I find the healthy equilibrium between this and that? How tightly strung is my wire? Is it too loose? Too tight? Just tight enough that it'll hold me up, yet still have play? And perhaps most important of all, am I simply walking through this relationship, or am I dancing? As you ask yourselves those questions this week, as we ask ourselves those questions this week, that's the sermon I have to offer this morning. Thank you for listening.